to counties to use a minimum lot size because it's administratively easier to deal with dwellings in this fashion. But there's nothing to do with it.
All I ask you is take one more look at that and give us reassurance on it, okay? Because I have some concern that we may be doing that, particularly in counties that don't have it, okay?
All right.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
On page six.
Just because it's been a while, as you go through, would you indicate not just the changes from the A and Gross, but the changes from...
Existing homes.
Yes.
I apologize, Mr. Chairman. I've lived with this a long time.
All right, on page six. Beginning on, well, it was a small change from existing law on line eight, and that is an authorization basically for counties to adopt their own conditions and standards for farm dwellings or other uses that are authorized by this part of 215. Then on line 10, lines 10 through 24 are the criteria for farm dwellings that don't involve a land division. This is really a companion to the provision that Senator Day and I were talking about. If a county does not have an acknowledged minimum lot size, this is the process it follows for review of farm dwellings, lines 10 through 24. Now what this says, if I can abbreviate it somewhat, is when an application is received, a county determines whether or not the parcel or the farm of which the parcel is a part is 20 acres or more. If it is, then it looks to see whether the parcel or the farm or the woodlot of which it is a part is as large as or larger than the average farm or the average woodlot in the county that produces $2,500 or more in gross income. If the answer in both of those questions is yes, it is larger than 20 acres and it is larger than the average farm or woodlot producing that money, then a permit is issued for farm dwelling. If, on the other hand, getting down to little b on line 17, if the parcel or the farm of which the parcel is a part, or the woodlot, is smaller than 20 acres, or if it is smaller than the average farm or woodlot producing $2,500 or more in gross income, then the person doesn't automatically get a dwelling. The person has to do one of two things. The person has to show that in the past, the applicant has produced $10,000 in gross income in two consecutive years, and if that's the case, then that person, regardless of the size of the parcel, is entitled to a farm dwelling. Or if the person hasn't produced that kind of income historically, then the person has planted perennials that are capable of producing that income. If either one of those is true, then the person can get a building, can get a permit for a farm dwelling regardless of the parcel size.
Okay, can I work you over a little bit here? Okay, let's go to B. I think you want to put in there perennials or trees. Okay, or trees. Because I think we talked about woodlot owners, that you should look at woodlot owners. I don't know whether trees is proper, but crops which aren't necessarily harvested every year, okay? The other thing is, and I think you might want to put in there, upon harvest. In other words, some crops are harvested every 2 years, some may be harvested 45 years from now. My point is, you may want to look upon harvest. Do you follow what the point I'm making to you?
I do, yes, I agree.
The other thing I point out to you, I think there's some contradiction in A and B on the $10,000 amount and your $2,500 amount in line 15. I have trouble tracking those two, and I'm not sure there isn't an error here. So I without belaboring the committee, I think you may want to apply, maybe I'm wrong, the same test in line 15 that you would to lines A and B on 21 and 23, but I think that's an error, but I could be wrong.
There is a change in both of these figures, the $2,500 figure and the $10,000 figure from the A and Gross version. And the change, as Agriculture for Oregon presented the bill at first, there was a constant $20,000 figure every place where you see a dollar figure now. the reason for the change, first of all, on line 15, from $20,000 to $2,500, is that counties now have available to them from the Census of Agriculture figures about the average farmer woodlot in their county producing $2,500 or more. It's a very simple matter for the county.
I guess what I'm saying is, don't you intend to carry that to line 21 and 20? That's what I understood. Didn't you intend to carry it to the other two lines? Did you intend
to? No.
You did not.
No, sir, they did not, because that is such a very low annual gross income that I think it would have the effect of authorizing farm dwellings on very, very small parcels, on parcels that are not devoted to any kind of substantial farm use. It's not difficult to produce $2,500 in annual gross income.
Okay. In other words, it was not an error.
No, it's intentional.
I guess what I'd ask you again to take a look at that again, okay? Particularly on those areas, because I don't want to make it too easy, but I'd at least like to know we're in the ballpark. And if you're looking at $2,500 at that on your annual gross income, that's something you start to identify, then there ought to be some test we can have. The annual on a harvest or trees is something I think it's difficult for, I'm sure you mean upon harvest, and I don't think you can, if we're growing trees and we don't harvest for 40 years, how the heck are we going to show an annual income? I don't think you can the way that's written. So I just point this out to the committee. These are questions I have. I'd like to have you examine that again and tell me basically why that is so liberal. Okay, it looks to me like not many people are going to qualify under those circumstances. Okay.
Are you saying it's too liberal or it's...
I think that it's not liberal enough for people who may be working a small acre farm that should qualify. You follow what I'm trying to say, particularly if they're in perennials or that type of thing. They may not harvest them every year. If I understand some of the flowers and you know, that type of thing, it isn't necessarily an annual harvest, okay? And the other thing I'm saying is that if they are producing, should we deny them a home on it if they really can show they're making that, even if it if that income, if we are artificially putting it too high? These are income levels that this legislature really hasn't dealt with to determine whether that is fair. I want to make sure that we err a little bit on the side of the low side so we aren't excluding people who are actually farming and probably, you know, keeping land in cultivation we want. Do you follow what I'm trying to say?
Well, certainly, let me give you one example. You can produce $10,000 worth of grapes on average land with an average yield on 5 acres.
Let me give you another story. You can produce maybe $10,000 worth of nuts 2 years ago in Filberts. The price has dropped out and they may not be worth $1,000 right now. My point to you is, let's make sure that we err a little bit on the side, that we keep those areas where they can have a house and continue farming, because some of these smaller acreage of farming, I know you don't want to deny, I'm just trying to point out, is that income test reasonable? Okay, look at it. Okay, you may be right, okay, but I do think upon harvest it makes some sense to be, I really do, okay?
Senator, I can assure you that the farmers who put this bill together looked at it, and of course when they proposed it, it was 20,000.
Well, proposing something doesn't make it necessarily law. What makes it law is the reasonableness of the approach, okay?
Understood.
And I'm just telling you, look another time. You may be right, okay? But I think the annual harvest is correct, or the upon harvest is correct if you're looking at trees and some other. I think you do too.
I think that's a very good suggestion, as well as inserting.
I'm not giving you a real bad time, but the income test. All I'm worried about is that we don't exclude people, tell them they can't have a farmhouse when they're ideally are cultivating and doing a fairly decent job of it, because we set an artificial income test that maybe was too darn high, okay? All right.
Go ahead, Rick.
I'm on page 7. Beginning on, well, you see that on line 3, there's a paragraph removed there, and it's incorporated into a paragraph that begins on line 5. And the effect of that is to say that campgrounds, parks, playgrounds, campgrounds, or community centers are authorized as conditional uses in EFU zones if they're owned and operated by a governmental agency or a nonprofit community organization. that the change is the addition of campgrounds is subject to the limitation as to ownership and operation. Hunting and fishing preserves are left alone from existing law. And I believe what the what Agriculture for Oregon was attempting to do here is to take care of the, to eliminate the possibility that a campground such as a KOA or other kind of private campground that's really can be in fairly large scale and of large impact in an exclusive farm zone, that they not be authorized as conditional uses in EFU zones.
Mr. Chairman?
Good day.
On line two, Dick, at a proper time, I may offer an amendment that would, after resources on line two, you may want to write it down. As defined in ORS 517.750, okay? Now, the net effect of that is that if we continue areas of aggregate, there would be a question of it, okay? I want that question dealt with once and for all, okay? So that's what the net effect, I just told you I may offer that at a given point in time. The other point I make is that in the private campgrounds, what we got, this is a little naive right here, and I've got to tell you why. We've turned most of our federal campgrounds over to hot shots from Denver, Colorado. I had some friends that came back from, I guess it was Crescent Lake, and they have a Denver outfit charging them $10 a tent up there out of Denver, telling Oregonians how to handle it, and we're really full of fun on that one, okay? And, so I just call attention to you that private parks and playgrounds and so forth, I don't know that it's necessarily a scourge and what have you, and most Oregonians figure that parks ought to be run by public entities. I think that's correct, but on the other hand, we're finding that the funds are drying up, concessionaires are coming into this type of thing, and I don't know what happens when you do that if we concessionaire it out. I look at your amendment and make sure they can still do it. I'm not sure I'm in favor of it all, but we don't seem to have the funds, okay?
The next major change is on page 8. And this is also a change from the A&Ghost version, starting on line 13. The A&Ghost version, if you'll recall, said that what prohibited, had the effect of prohibiting any further non-farm dwellings in EFU zones in Western Oregon. Instead now, lines 13 through 18, the effect of that is to authorize non-farm dwellings on lots or parcels with soils in classes 4 through 8, provided that those parcels can satisfy the non-farm dwelling criteria that follow on pages 8 and 9. On page 9, starting on line 1, that's paragraph A, and then paragraph B, there are two new criteria for non-farm dwellings in EFU zones. On line A, the first one says that a dwelling can be approved as a non-farm dwelling in EFU zone if the dwelling or the activities that go along with it will not force a major change in or increase the cost of accepted farming practices.
Mr. Chairman?
Or ways devoted to farm use.
Tell me how that's going to work.
Well, I can perhaps best explain it by giving you an example.
It comes
from a case that went up to Lubo on several occasions. There was a 20-acre cherry orchard in Polk County. Next to the cherry orchard was a small parcel, I think around 1 acre. And the owner of the 1 acre parcel proposed to put a non-farm dwelling on it, and proposed to build the non-farm dwelling fairly close to the cherry orchard in a spot which would be right under the path of the plane that sprayed the orchard 8 times a year. the orchard owner came in and objected to the non-farm dwelling in that location and presented evidence about the spraying pattern, et cetera, what she would have to do if the dwelling were approved.
Okay.
And the county approved it anyway, and it went to LUBA, and LUBA reversed it on other grounds. But the way I see this working is this orchard land owner could come in and say that if you put the house there, I'm going to have to change the way I spray my orchard. It's going to be a major change because the way my 20 acres is, if I come from this direction, I only have to make two passes. But if you build this house, I have to come from this direction, I have to make four passes. And that's going to cost me the money for the extra two
passes. What's the art of measurably?
Pardon me?
What's the art of measurably?
Well, it has to be something that's measurable. It can't, a farmer can't come in and say, this is going to cause me a problem and I just can't describe it for you and I can't define it, I don't know how big it is. The farmer has an obligation to try to quantify it or show that it actually is going to cost.
It's been established in land use cases where they what they define as measurably. Have they defined that in case law?
Not that I'm aware of. Maybe I can defend the word a little bit by describing the dynamic of that led to the choice of that word. This language came from the Joint Legislative Committee on Land Use.
Yes.
And it was recommended by the Exclusive Farm Use Task Force. The Farm Bureau Federation, serving on the task force, wanted to leave measurably out, wanted no modifier, so that if there was any increase in the cost, that the non-farm dwelling could not be approved. The counties, on the other hand, said, well, that's really not right. A farmer could come in and show any kind of increase in cost and the non-farm dwelling couldn't be approved. The counties suggested substantially. That didn't make the cut because no one knew precisely what substantially means, and it was so ill-defined that it was often hard to get your grasp on. So measurably was the compromise word.
Mr. Chairman, that's another area I think I'd earmark. We ought to have legislative counsel or some other advice on that particular phrase. I have no problem with looking at something that is going to change farming practices. Of course, we passed the right to farm 2 years ago, but whether measurably is the term you want to use for that, I don't know yet. And I wouldn't want it to be ambiguous. Go ahead.
The next change is on lines 7 through 9. It's an addition to what is known as the unsuitability criterion. There's case law, Senator Day, I'm sure you're familiar with the Rutherford case. The intent of this language is that a county not determine that a parcel or tract of land is unsuitable just because it is small. That's the holding of the Rutherford case, basically. The facts of that case may show you this, the sense of this. In that case, the applicant owned a 5-acre parcel of class 2 soil. The 5-acre parcel was in an area where there had been some parcelization, but no real residential settlement. The 5-acre parcel in question actually was being farmed in conjunction with a nearby farm operation. The county said it's unsuitable because it's too small. The petitioner said, no, it's not unsuitable, it's class 2 soil, it's now being farmed, and it can continue to be farmed as it has been in the past. And the Court of Appeals said, that's right. Just because a parcel is small doesn't mean it's unsuitable. And that's what this language here tries to accomplish. And it's modified on line 8 by the word reasonably. That is, the applicant doesn't have to show that there's no way possible that his or her small tract of relatively good land can be farmed. The burden on the applicant is to show that it can't reasonably be farmed. There's no reasonable way to manage this so that it can be farmed with nearby land. On lines 12 through the next page is something new. It's not in the law now. This is an authorization for the owners of parcels 2 acres or smaller in an EFU zone to get permit for a non-farm dwelling, so long as the dwelling is not going to interfere with nearby farm practices. It's basically a modified lot of record provision for the owners of parcels in EFU zones that are 2 acres or smaller. And there is a process set out for counties to use to review these applications, lines 21 through 22. It's intended to be an easy process that doesn't require a hearing for every application. The process is a county receives an application. Instead of scheduling a hearing, the county simply sends notices to the owners of nearby farmland. If none of those farmers, if none of those owners of nearby farmland complains about it and says this is going to interfere, then the county can go ahead and approve it without holding a hearing.
Dick, we had a comment, I think this is Mr. Grosch, last week concerning the notice requirements and that they might be a little bit, you know, excessive. How did you arrive at 1,500 feet?
Well, I think the farmers on the Board of Agriculture for Oregon chose that because they think that farms within 1,500 feet are more likely to be affected by a non-farm dwelling than farms farther away. It's clearly an arbitrary figure, but an awful lot of county ordinances now have notice provisions, even in EFU zones of simply 250 feet or no more than adjacent properties. And that is really unfair to farm operators in many cases because the 250 feet in the city context may sound like a long distance, but in a farm area, it may barely penetrate the adjoining pasture. And consequently, one farm operator who's simply one property removed may never hear about an application that can have an impact on his operation.
Mr. Chair,
I don't think there's any magic in 1,500 feet. I think the farmers just want an opportunity to get notice.
Sir,
I hearken back when we tried to deal with notice and permission. Geez, we just went through purgatory because local governments prefer their quickie notice, you know, in certain paper like the state agencies prefer, the Secretary of State's bulletin. You know, it's fast and down and dirty, but 1,500 feet, I think, is kind of modest if you want to offend the rural area.
How about 2 miles?
As I understood, Mr. Grosch's testimony, he was concerned about the cost impact on the county. I think that the county could perhaps be authorized to pass the cost on to the applicant. A lot of counties do this in their EFU zones anyway. They require the applicant to go down to the assessor's office and identify people who are within the notice distance and to send the notice out. And I think that's a way of dealing with the cost.
Could reimburse the county for the distribution of the notice as well, couldn't they? I mean, we could fix it so they could give reimbursement for that notice. You might make a note of that if you will, please, Todd.
Okay,
On page 10, lines 3 through 5.
We provide that kind of levelized as we go through. It's an extra service that there's no charge for, I want to assure you, Mr. Brown.
I don't think In the A endorsed version, there is an authorization for life estates. Legislative council chose to put it here rather than where it was earlier, thinking that, and I think this is correct, that since it is not really a use itself, it ought to be listed here, and there's no substantial difference in the language from what was in the earlier draft, and the intention is to alert the owners of farmland that there is an option for them. They can retain a life estate in their dwelling and the land under and around it, sell the entire farm to a farm buyer, and remain out there as long as they choose.
Okay.
In section 5, line 18 is the first major change. This describes the circumstances in which land can be divided for farm purposes. And it incorporates the language from Goal 3. If you recall, at an early hearing, there was testimony from the county council from Yandell County that he was afraid that the language as it was initially presented in the bill would put counties with acknowledged minimum lot size as if at a disadvantage because they would have to make findings all over again that the proposed parcels were appropriate for commercial agriculture. So this was rewritten in a way that protects the county with an acknowledged minimum lot size. If someone wants to create, let's say Yandell County has a 40-acre minimum lot size that's been approved by LCDC, someone wants to take 120 acres and create 3 40-acre parcels. The county could approve those under this language simply by saying we rely on our acknowledged minimum lot size. They don't have to make new findings that 40 acres is appropriate for commercial agriculture. That's the effect of lines 21 and 22. On line 23, this provision here, 23 through 27, deals with a situation where someone wants to create a parcel for a non-residential use, such as a park, a church, a school, one of the other non-farm uses authorized in an EFU zone. And what it says is you can do that, but you need to make a finding that the parcel that is to be created is the minimum size necessary for the use. So the minimum land is taken out of farming, basically. That's the objective.
You're putting churches and all that to that?
Yes.
What's the effect of our little amendment that we had over here? We got penciled in. We're going to make it a permitted use period on page 5. How does that change that?
I'll say today it doesn't change it. If someone is proposing a school and has other buildings that are accessory to it, or wants to put accessory buildings where there's already a school, and they need to create a parcel, they would be able to here, so long as the parcel created is the minimum size necessary for the use. So I presume that if they were...
They still have to go through a conditional use to get the parcel.
Yes, that's right. That's right.
If they bought a big enough parcel, they could build the church permitted use.
That's right.
But if they're going to take a partial, partition something, they're going to have to get a conditional use for the partial alone, not for the. If they bought a big enough partial, you wouldn't care.
That's right.
Okay.
Okay, Dick.
On the top of page 11, lines 1 through 3, there is an authorization here to create parcels for non-farm dwellings, so long as those non-farm dwellings are approved under the previous section that we've already covered. On lines 4 through 6, is the prohibition on subdivisions in EFU zones. That's all of the major changes in the bill to the EFU zoning. The rest of the bill, section 6, all the way to the end, I believe, all the way to line 14. On page 14, has to do with regulation of minor partitions. Minor partitions would now have to be regulated by county governing bodies.
I thought you did a pretty good job after all the cross-examination, Mr. Brent.
Got a lot of facts.
Yeah, you really have. Two of the concerns I have, Mr. Chairman, we'd like to move this along, but I do believe it requires a great deal more detail if you're going to have a good bill, okay? There's some detail there, at least some things I pointed out to you. The department has just started to review the proposal and just had copies of it this afternoon. I think the material that you use to develop this on your field testing would be extremely helpful, I think, for support of this legislation. Mr. Chairman, I appreciate it. So they can make an analysis of that.
I can make that available to the department tomorrow.
One other thing that I think I have concern with, so you know, in Ways and Means, they're looking at curtailment, further curtailment, particularly at budget reductions because of a certain loss of federal funds. This department has enough trouble getting the remaining acknowledgments passed, and I particularly want a review by the department and the fiscal staff to determine the implications of just what this is going to require. And I think that's important that we know. And because if they take $800,000 in their budget, I can guarantee you there is no way that they're going to get their acknowledgments done, let alone any other task we wish to assign them. And I understand there's quite a bit of little difficulty down there right now. A little bird tells me that. I hope you all bear that in mind. I'm willing to go for it.